Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the live tour that we are honour-bound to promote. My name is Caroline, and do you live in Bristol, Brighton, Salford Keys or Glasgow? Well then do I have a story for you. Joining me is the 30 tickets still remaining at the Hackney Empire. It's Alexandra Haddo.
Hello!
Why ever are we here today?
I am in fact the unwanted seats of the comedy world.
Each empty glowing seat. I hope it's news to some of you, so you can rush out and get your tickets. But we're going to be doing a live tour together this June.
I am so excited.
It's going to be so much fun.
Do you know why? Because as a comedian, sure, some of your life seems kind of glamorous and is at times. Yeah. But even when I'm on tour, it's me, like a sad little worm, going to the gig venue, then going to the hotel and watching the last leg with a bag of crisps. But this time,
or naked
I'll be
attraction,
with you.
Always yes. Naked attraction.
It's always naked attraction especially hotel rooms, I feel.
I genuinely think that, like, in the way that you go into American hotel rooms and they've got all the pay-per-view porn, that, like, Channel 4 has done a deal with the hotels of the UK that's like,
yeah,
will make people sort of like low-key horny and weirded out and make them like order a room service and drink everything in the minibar while they watch Naked Attraction again and again and again. Like, there has to be a link.
Well, you're just like, God, what I could do with right now is watching a man's brightly lit cock whilst chowing down on some Pringles and a martini.
Just like a woman with a huge bush being eliminated from the dating pool because she doesn't seem cheerful enough from the waist down.
I love when there's someone like clearly much less conventionally attractive than the rest on the lineup. Like much, you know, they get a huge kind of glowing, you know, three among the sevens or something. And then they have to say, oh, I'm going to get rid of so and so. And then they're like, why? And they say, just in like a fringe.
I know. And they're like, they always do, they always keep that person for the first round so they don't seem shallow.
They do.
And then the second round, they're like, all right.
All right, you've had your
fun. All right, come on, let's be serious.
Yeah. Come on, fun time's over now.
I think I've talked about this on a podcast before, but I can never tell whether like Naked Attraction is the end of the world or the beginning of a rebirth of like bodies are fucking neutral. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's no body positivity. There's no body negativity. We all just have one. We all just look at them.
To be fair, it's very clinical, I feel, isn't it? You know when they have to do that really soul-destroying walk-off at the end? You feel like even like Claudia Schiffer would look like a dropped trifle. Do you know what I mean?
Literally. Like walking shoeless off of a studio set.
Your damp, sweaty feet.
Right? Gliding off of that shined surface. And then at a certain point, you will cross over to the backstage area and then you'll just feel the dust gather on the balls of your feet and be like, this is what I did with my day.
As the cameraman you were friendly with earlier that day in pre-production hands you a robe and looks at you like a piece of shit.
And what you're hearing, everyone, is chemistry, and you'll be hearing more of that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to launch into the
diatribe. This is exactly what we want. So I think lots of people know that the live shows of Sentimental Garbage, we generally start with a bit of a chat, bit of a, like a pop culture discussion. We'll probably talk a little bit about my book, The Rachel Incident, while we're doing it.
Yes.
You'll have to, you're like, yes, I take my dedication to the world of books very seriously.
I will reread it in paperback. To get to Daniel Day-Lewis it, you know?
Yeah. It's,
you got to get in character. You got to
be talking an Irish accent.
Yes. I'll be very offensive throughout all the shows. That's a promise.
If you could just do the whole part of the show where you interview me with the book only in an Irish accent.
Yes.
And then just flip back to your normal accent.
Yes. Yeah, and not sort of acknowledge it on the night.
No, no one says a thing.
No. You actually like when I do an Irish accent, but I can never do it in front of anybody else.
I like when anyone does an accent, to be honest. It's a very controversial opinion of mine that I just think like the sounds of the world are funny.
Yeah, they're having a go.
We're all just having a go.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this the other night about like how the worst thing you can do to a person is if they're like telling a story and they're like having a go at a Scottish accent or whatever, and then somebody else waits for them to stop talking and says, didn't realise they were Australian.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, mate.
It's like, okay, yeah, you're the king of humour, are you?
Yeah. Shut up.
Always men.
Yeah. It is always men.
Yeah. So.
Men. That would be topic one.
Topic one, men. It starts off with a kind of like a little bit of chat, a little bit of book talk, but then the sort of main thrust of the show really is people from the audience put sort of stuff into the garbage can that they want to have like their hot take on. And I was thinking in preparing this sort of promo episode today, what are the five things that if they were to come out of the sentimental garbage can, you would just lose your shit?
Yes, these are very current obsessions as well. I'm aflame with these.
You're aflame with
it. As we speak.
That's good because, like, it's April now. It'll be June then. You'll have moved on by then.
Yeah.
It'll all be out of your system.
I'll be slagging these off by then.
Yeah.
I'm fickle.
Who knows what we'll be into then? Who knows what will come up?
Exactly.
This is like an intro to you. I mean, like, not that people really need an intro to you in that you were on the Kate Moss episode before.
Oh, yeah.
You're on a bunch of other podcasts.
No, but people, sentimental garbage fans, some of them will not know who I am, which quite frankly is disgusting.
And frankly, misogynist. The first thing that you put on your list, and I was immediately fucking obsessed, was Kiss FM.
Okay.
/ Kistery.
Kistery specifically.
Tell everybody what Kiss FM was in case they don't remember.
So Kiss FM was, I still think, the ultimate kind of either summer Saturday barbecue radio station or pre-going out music radio
summer
station.
Summer Saturday barbecue. That is not how I would categorize it, but you're correct, yes.
But it's not the start of the barb. It's the
barb is getting dark, the kids have gone home.
Yes, exactly.
Or there's like a sleeping toddler underneath the bench covered in Fanta.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody didn't mean to stay out that late. So you've banged on Kiss. And back in the day, it was kind of getting ready music, essentially, I would say. It was like dance, garage, R&B, anything where the DJ talks like this.
It was so important. You know how they always say about like magazines, particularly women's magazines, how it's always like people reading up for the next kind of age bracket.
Yeah.
Especially girls, right?
So it was totally this. Yeah.
It was totally this. So when you were 10, you read Ms. When you were 12, you read J17. When you were 17, you read More for Position of the Week. And then on and on until you're reading The Lady at 34 in the train station, which is what I like to do to see who needs a help at the back pages. Who needs a nanny?
I feel like, you know how there was an underage club in every town where as soon as you were of age, you were too old to be in there?
Yeah.
I feel like nobody's actually read Position of the Week when they had actually started having
actual sex completely. But Kiss FM, I think, was very much like that as well, in that like I really associated with like hearing it before I was old enough to go to a club, but being like, this is the person I can fantasize about being when I am in the club.
You have absolutely nailed that on the head. It was so kind of the older sister going out radio station.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like watching them go out and be like, oh God, I can't wait till it's me. But you're listening to the music that you assumed they were listening to in the club.
Yeah. And I think probably they were.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
In your head, when you were like 13 and just like, I think we were both probably on the gawky side, maybe.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was just a big like a wiggly worm, really.
I was weighed 2 stone with big teeth.
Yeah, you were just blue as
I was blue.
Just like your skin was just paper over blue paint.
It was exactly that. Yeah. I was a
printer
skinny
paper over blue paint is your colouring.
That is it. And it was even worse back then.
And like, but like when you were 13 and you imagined yourself at 18, what did she look like?
Yeah, it was literally, I was thinking, I'm going to be going out to clubs, listening to all this music. I'm going to have like a really cool boyfriend.
Yeah,
and
with a car.
With a car, yes. And I did, shout out to Daz.
having a boyfriend with a Z in his name.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
Very Kiss FM.
Very Kiss FM.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of, it was sort of like being the woman in that One Up magazine, I think. You feel like you would know everything.
Yeah.
And it did feel like a very like sex adjacent radio station. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because garage music was very much a big part of that time period, right, when we were young.
Yeah.
And garage was very sexy.
Yes.
Now, sometimes I can't tell whether I have gaps in my knowledge because I'm Irish or because I wasn't like plugged in enough to a certain scene. So, but and maybe Irish people will write in and say that I'm demented, but like I feel like garage didn't properly come to Ireland. Like we heard about it through English things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And it would be like Craig David and the Artful Dodger. But I never felt like the scene was ever happening around me, but it was definitely happening around you, right?
Well, it wasn't necessarily happening around me. It was happening in London and I was 2 hours north, but it felt like it was, I think, and again, I am not like a music expert, but I think it was very London-centric.
Yeah.
And then, but because I was, you know, not that I was like in the Midlands, but it, I was hearing everything as it kind of came out. I mean, in no way was I like underground. I was like 13, 14. But yeah. anything that was in the top 40 that was garage related. It was such a fun genre. And it was like when you were coming up and, you know, starting to kind of try and go out to places and garage was kind of like at its peak at that time. I feel like you were just... That was intrinsically linked. It was basically like all these people are listening to this in clubs months before you. You're getting it last. You know?
That is so, when you start realizing that about top 40, that's actually quite a powerful thing that you... Yeah. Top 40 just means that you're getting it last.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a real point during your mid-teens where you're like, yeah, I got the now 64 compilation CD or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And then you realize that, oh no, this has been going... These people have been going for years. This song's maybe going 6 months and it's kicked off so much in clubs that they've like got a, you know, they've got a deal to release it. And then, you know, people that were kind of 8-9 years older than me, I think, probably hit it at its peak at going out and actually hearing all these artists, you know, like kind of producing like literally amazing.
Explain to like international listeners, like what, because garage is such a UK phenomenon, what sonically it is.
Oh my God. It's sort of like, I mean, again, music like tech people will write in and be like, this is completely untrue.
It's like any of them listen to this podcast.
Yeah, well, I feel like it's sort of like a cross between dance and hip-hop and R&B.
Yeah.
Because it's more clubby than like a sexy sort of R&B. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a bit like crass. It's a bit in your face. It's a bit, it sounds a bit, in the best way possible, DIY.
Yeah.
It feels like somebody's got a beat, like there's like a, you know, there's an MC over the top, like rapping about something that feels completely freestyle. The main theme of a lot of garage tunes, which I've realised in my recent session with Kistery, which is basically like harking back to that peak time of Kiss, is the main theme is like, I've cheated on you, why are you bothered about it?
It so is. I was listening to like a Kistery playlist today and it was just like, I can't remember, it was like Wolfman or something like that, and it was like why are you mad just because I had sex with your best friend, why you not come over, like
honest to God, I was listening to it for about 2 hours, right? I was like painting some props for a shoot today last night in my room, and I was listening to it for 2 hours. I started counting the songs that had somebody talking about cheating. I got to 12. Like Usher, a big, like he's not garage, but he was on Kiss, he's on Kistery a lot.
Yeah, why are you bothered about it?
It was literally like, look, yeah, I've done all this, but what? Come on. Like I said, I think I said earlier today, they treat cheating like you bought the wrong butter in the shop, but you're like, well, do you want the toast or not?
Like, Or you bought like oat milk by mistake when like they're on dairy now again.
We can move past this. And it's kind of like the sort of main theme is like, you're embarrassing for being bothered. Do you know what I mean?
That is so UK garage. Yeah. It's so funny. Whereas like then it's like, if you want to know the difference substantively between garage and, you know, American R&B and rap and pop. So UK garage, they're obsessed with I cheated on you, why are you so bothered? How embarrassing of you to be bothered. And then on the US side, it's more concerned with naming every nationality of woman that there is.
Always a list.
There's always like so many Will Smith songs or whatever. Anything kind of, and I feel like if we just talk musically speaking, Will Smith was like the American Craig David.
Yes, absolutely.
And yes, I think of it as that way around.
Yes,
Craig David, I believe, is, you know, the more seminal artist.
I think he had a new sound.
He did have a new sound. Yeah. And I'm glad that people are beginning to appreciate him again now, because he's doing a lot of DJing and I'm fucking thrilled for him.
I know. I really think that he... That's a different topic, but he really took the Bo Selector stuff, like, and the sort of complete send-up of his quite serious career. It kind of actually impacted his actual career.
It's crazy.
Isn't it?
I think about it so much.
Yeah.
Because, like, okay, I'm going to just park whatever joke I was about to go into.
Oh, sorry. I've gone through Craig David's emotional wormhole.
Okay, just to remind everyone, Will Smith loves to list ethnicities of women, where it's just like Colombia, Puerto Rican, Russian.
Yeah, he's like, I'm inclusive.
Yeah, you know my Polish girls, you can come over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, where my Moldovians at?
Yeah. Generally, they like go through all of the South American ones and then they'll just throw in some other, like, yeah, Vietnamese, who cares?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, they're welcome. Bring them in. Bring them in.
And then you'd be there craning your ear to the thing, being like, any Irish?
Yeah. Oh, the Irish and the English are never mentioned. The Brits, very rarely.
Very. Not anyone man's fantasy. But to go back to Craig, our friend, who is a frequent Kistery, Kiss FM regular.
As he should be.
He was this, again, context for international listeners or maybe people who are too young to remember this time. So Craig David like burst out in the scene in the early noughties, and he was like a huge, huge star of the garage scene.
Yeah.
And like it completely crossed over to this mainstream appeal. And he had this song that was like massive in clubs called Rewind.
Yeah.
Can you sing a little bit of it for me?
Rewind. When the crowd say vote.
Selector. And then, so he had this massive trajectory, this huge, huge album. It was like it outsold absolutely everything else.
It was mental.
Totally. He was snubbed by the Mercurys that year.
Yeah.
He was completely snubbed by all the major music prizes in the UK. And like many, many music critics and artists at the time were just like, this is fucking racist. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I think the Mercurys were quite well known for that during that period as well. Of just like,
oh God, yeah.
Just completely ignoring anyone non-white who was making like valuable and enormous contributions to British music. And so then he goes for the second album, he crosses over to America. It's that kind of Willy Wonka sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of like
baby,
the...
Baby, what's your flavour?
Tell me what's your flavour. Ow! Yeah.
I think he gets a bit of like flack for sort of abandoning his British roots or whatever. But then, like, Bo Selector comes out.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what that comedian's name is.
Lee Francis is his actual name, but his character in... Bo Selector was called Avid Merion.
Someone knows their comedy. Yeah, someone knows their profession.
Yeah, but I never. Do you know what? I never really watched it because I always thought, even at the time, this is shit.
This is. I remember thinking that it was a joke I wasn't getting.
Same. And I'm not just saying that retrospectively.
No. Because like, I was laughing at like Little Britain, for example.
Yeah.
Like my 12-year-old brain totally hooked onto that.
Yeah.
But Bo Selector just felt like ugly and weird.
Yeah, I never laughed at it or enjoyed it, so I just thought, oh, it's not for me.
And I definitely didn't care about Craig David and didn't care that he was being made fun of, but like he kind of went after Craig David mercilessly. He went after Mel B mercilessly.
Yeah.
And the kind of the critique that people often answer to that is like, well, he went after loads of celebrities. It's like, yeah, but he really went after prominent Black British celebrities.
Yeah, and those are the two that even if you'd have asked me out of nowhere, those are the two I'd be like, oh yeah, they got sent up a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, Mel B was famous enough that she had enough things that you wouldn't associate her with.
Yeah.
Bo Selector. She was living in America. Like, I think she had Eddie Murphy's baby at that point. Like, she had this huge career.
She had a lot going on.
Craig David was still young enough in his career for it to be like, and as well, the show was called Bo Selector.
Yeah, which is
his
thing.
He named it after his biggest song.
Which is really weird. And I'm pretty sure, by the way, that when that came out, Craig David, as in when his first song, when Rewind went crazy, that he was 18. I'm pretty sure he's 18.
He was super young.
Yeah, he was really young. And he just kind of... And then it sort of became conflated with the real Craig David. Like so many... He said like he had to move to America because people were just shouting at him on the street all the time and like shouting the catchphrases of Avid Merion. Like it must be a bit annoying, having your own catchphrases shouted at you every now and then.
Yeah.
But you're like, well... You know, it's my work. You know, I get it. But having somebody's piss take of you shouted at you all the time must have been shit.
And that just being your name said in a weird way.
Yeah.
The Crane David.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not even funny. It's not clever. It's like nothing. And it's almost like the stupidness of it gives him like no power to respond. Because it's like, how do you, it's not like someone's like put a diss track on him or something like that, or said something like true about him that he can refute. It's just like this random, disgusting rubber mask, like saying his name weird and going around with a Kestrel.
Yeah, totally weird. Like, that's why I was always like, oh, this is bollocks. This is just shit.
This is not smart.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that we were...
ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve. I was too busy. One aspect.
I was too busy trying to watch Eurotrash.
Now that was fucking funny and hurt no one.
I know.
Nobody got hurt in Eurotrash.
So good.
Except for Lola Ferrari.
God love her.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
Actually, there's something I want to say about history.
Go on.
You texted it to me the other day and now it's become... like a rattle in my head. I just like say it going around the house.
Yeah. What did I say?
You were like, because we went out on Saturday night.
Yes, had a lovely time.
We had a great time. And you said that you were listening to Kistory while you were getting ready. And you said you were enjoying it so much. That
I know
you
what
just,
you're going
to
say.
You just wanted to, you wanted to text a radio station to say, keep the tunes coming, lads. And I was just walking around my house for 2 days being like, keep the tunes coming, lads. It's the greatest response to everything. Just keep the tunes coming, lads.
You know what? It's so good. I put it on to come and get ready with you. My first Saturday night off, not gigging in, honestly, so long. It was an actual, like, it was a sunny evening. The clocks had gone forward. I had Kistory on for the first time in ages. I was like, this is the fucking greatest night of my life.
Yeah,
like,
it's already, I've not left the house and it's already the greatest night of my life.
Yeah, and I was doing like audio recordings of the songs and sending them to the group chat being like, they're playing this now, they're playing this now. And my mate was like, God, it's banger after banger. I was like, I'm texting in, lads. I'm texting in.
Keep the tunes coming, lads.
Keep the tunes coming. Just loving it here. Getting ready for a night out with Caroline.
And there's something about that, because I think the reason it's stuck in my head so much and has really dominated my week, just that phrase, it's because I just remember that time where you would be sitting in your friend's boyfriend's car in the back while they got off with each other probably, or just drove around aimlessly going to pick up someone called Spoonzy or something. Do you know what I mean? And the car is horrible. It stinks
always.
Of weed. It's like the worst car in the world with massive alloys on it or something. Kiss FM is blaring and just every now and then you just hear someone reading out a text message from some guy in like Derry. Yeah, yeah. Keep the tunes coming, lads. Thanks, Anto.
Thank God she texted in.
We're about to quit.
We're about to drop a dud, but now she said that. Here we go. Do you know what? I was thinking since I said that to you, I was like, it actually made me very nostalgic for radio, having to wait, like listening to something and being like, "What? Oh my God, what's going to be the next track?" rather than a playlist that you've put on for everybody or like your music. And then getting really excited if your text got read out and it would be like...
And like waiting.
Gary and the boys clenched. Getting ready in Wakefield. Got a 30th at the Indian Lounge tonight. And heading out into town. Have a good time, guys. Okay, this is DJ Luck and MC Neat.
What? Do you just make up those DJs?
No, they're real.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, she's too quick. I can't handle it.
Also, by the way, the best song, which was on Saturday night before I came to meet you, and it's the best example of don't blame me for cheating, blah, 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 is a song called Please Don't Turn Me On. And it's basically he's out in the club and he's asking the girls, please. Stop turning him on because he's not that strong. He's got a girl at home. And if you persist, he's going to shag you. And it won't be his fault.
I'm going to move on to the next thing that you want to pull out of the sentimental garbage tin. And it said, and I'm actually very confused about this one.
Oh.
The mature sesh.
Ah, yes, the mature sesh.
The mature sesh.
The mature sesh relates to...
Yes.
In your 30s, dabbling in substances, fun ones, not ones where people go, oh God, you're right.
Yeah, fun ones. We all know what they are.
Yeah, fun ones. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. I was basically going to talk about how we all like regulate our sesh and just like we don't go insane because we're not 23.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah, you're not 23 anymore. You're not going crazy. You're not having a 3-day hangover. Yeah. You're not going
absolutely insane. You're having a little bit of something and having an absolutely lovely time.
A little bit of something.
A little bit of something. And you're waking up on the Sunday and you're having a roast dinner and you're fine. You can eat it.
It's called knowing your body, Alex.
And do we know our bodies?
And you know what? I will never judge a piss head, ever.
No.
I really won't. But it does occur to me every now and then when you're out either with someone or there are other people who are out and they're your age. They're 5 years either side of your age.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they're being sloppy. And it's like, are you really still getting sloppy?
Yeah.
Are you not listening to who you are?
Yeah. And yeah. I don't think I've been sloppy pissed in a while. And it doesn't happen very often. And I think it's because I've come to this quite late. It's like, actually, a few drinks and then a little something.
So I love much, not clarifying the something.
It's so much nicer. Clarifying something, as we experienced recently, a weed gummy.
Yeah. Do you know what? Me and Alex spit a weed gummy on a night out after a few glasses of fizz and we had the best time ever.
I had the best night I've had in so long and I woke up the next day and taught a comedy class.
I felt so good.
By the way, that's not like a euphemism for me schooling someone. I actually did take a
You taught a comedy class.
And I felt I had such a great night. I didn't booze that. I didn't have a drink after like 9:30.
Yeah.
What a time. Like the mature sesh, I think, is the way forward. Instead of spending an absolute shitload on booze that makes you feel shit towards the end of even the night.
Yeah.
Like, let alone the next day. No.
I love the mature sesh.
The mature sesh is it.
And the essence of the mature sesh, it comes from a great deal of knowledge. And it's the self-knowledge of your body and what you can take and what you actually enjoy versus what feels like abrasive and punishing and like someone pushing the shots on you. And you're like, listen, I've been around the roundabout with this. I don't like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's also knowing your fucking friends. It's like, I love, I'm 34 in 3 weeks. I love that like at this point, most of my friends I've known for like at least 10 years. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or thereabouts. I know them really well. We can have just a silly time and there's no grudges. There's no bitchiness. There's just like, it's just lovely.
It's just, I've literally got a whole new bit about trying MDMA later in life and being like, it is just lovely. Like talking about it like a mum, because that is how I feel about it. I'm like, oh, everyone's got their own little way, but they're together. You know, I feel like cocaine is a very... I've never been into it.
No, nor I.
Dated a lot.
Aggressive, dark.
Yeah, and very... people see it as a social drug. It's not.
No.
It's really,
it just
really
makes
not.
People want to go into smaller and smaller corners with fewer and fewer people.
Yes.
Talking about worse and worse shit with more and more coke.
God,
I hate it. And if anyone pulls it out anywhere, I basically just leave.
Yeah, like, I've never been into it. I've dated a lot of guys who love it. And I think it's a very male drug as well. Is that a weird thing to say? But I think it is. I've never known a woman to like love it as much as like most men seem to love it given half the chance.
Do you know what? You're so right.
Yeah.
Yeah, men do love it. And I also think that there's sometimes an energy that can come over like a night out that has one too many lads in it. That it's, and like, you know, good having, it's always great to have a mixed night out.
Yeah,
lovely.
No, of course.
The gals are here, the lads are here.
Yeah.
But like when they get into that way where it's like this odd fight for dominance and they, I'm always kind of surprised with like in big guy nights out, how they need to edge toward like darkness or extremeness in order for them to prove to themselves that it's a memorable evening.
Yes, that is exactly it. And I'm the opposite, like anything that veers towards silliness.
Yeah.
That's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And it's the same with booze as well. You know, like people that they'll drink whiskey on a night out. Like, and a whiskey at the end of a meal is different, right? But people that drink whiskey on a night out and then you know they're going to have a fight at like 1 a.m. You're like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah,
just have a few glasses of fizzy wine, Darren. Do you know what I mean? Like,
come on, Daz.
You'll have a lovely time.
Yeah. And also, this is something I kept saying on a loop to you the other night.
Yeah.
Which was, I can't believe my relationship, this goes back to Kiss FM as well, my relationship to dancing over my life has changed in a way that is really really improved my mental state, I think. Yeah. Like, genuine. Like, I remember when I was young going to like discos for the first time and you're there to dance with your friends feeling so unbelievably insecure because, like, I think I put a lot of stock in myself as a young, very young person being like, I'm not into sports because I'm a reader and reading is what I do. And like setting myself up against anything that is to do with the body or physical expressions yeah. of the body, of that whole realm being uncomfortable and bad and wrong. And then like, and like dance almost feeling like a social adjacent to sport.
Yeah.
Of being like, oh, another thing to be judged at. And then like, then you go get your 20s when people are actually like pulling and like using dance to fuck people.
Yes.
And
harnessing the power of the dance.
Yeah, harnessing the power of the dance to get laid. And then it becomes a weird like unspoken contest or whatever. And then you go through and you're in your mature sesh, you like your friends, you know your body, and you enjoy to dance for the act of dance.
Let the dance purists emerge. From 31 onwards, I would say.
Yeah. Mm. The dance purists simply emerge. Just be like,
yeah, the dance ultras. They really come into their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think it's so, one of the things that lockdown really highlighted to me was how much I loved dancing and how much yeah. I missed dancing. Because even when you're in your own house having a few drinks with your housemate, like, you know, it was difficult to get the right energy to like have a proper dance, you know, because it felt a bit like, oh, we're in the dying embers of the universe. But I honestly, out of lockdown, when things properly opened again, I sort of bolted like a greyhound out of...
Well, that was your entire rebirth as a DJ.
It was.
Yeah, because when I first met you many, many years ago, we were both working at the pool and you were the picture editor and you... Well, and I think, if I may say so, I think one of the big reasons why most people I've ever worked with who I've liked and had a good time with and I don't really stay in contact with, which is most people you ever work
yeah,
with, really.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And why you're one of the people that, like, I just know that we're going to be friends forever is because, like, we were really, really young and we had really big dreams.
Yeah.
That's so embarrassing to say out loud, but it's just true. Like, I badly wanted to be a novelist.
Yeah.
You badly wanted to be a stand-up comedian and we were just, like, G-ing each other on all the time.
100%.
And just really rooting for each other even when we were just, like, fucking little nothing.
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, you kind of basically started working as a full-time comedian as I was sort of like,
I know.
And it's like, it just means so much to me still.
Yeah, same. And I was thinking about that this week and I was thinking about when you got your book deal in the office and we sort of screamed and went yeah. crazy and I said that you'd finally tunneled out of Shawshank. I was Morgan Freeman back in the office the next day after you'd gone.
And now here you are joining me on the beautiful beach while I'm working on my book.
Oh, the sand between my toes.
But yeah, and so then you've like carved out this like huge career for yourself as a comedian. And then you just like post-lockdown added DJ because you're just like, people need to dance and there's fewer and fewer places to do it.
That is exactly why I did it. I was like, this is my perfect night out. And I feel like it's everybody's perfect night out.
Yeah.
And yet,
or at least everybody I want to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I don't even mean the type of music. Like, obviously, Indie Amnesty is like indie, Britpop, rock and roll. Yeah. We are maybe going to do a one-off 90s dance Amnesty because I just think it would be amazing.
That'd be great.
With Garage, obviously.
With Garage, obviously.
Maybe just get a Kistory DJ to do it. Anyway, regardless of the type of music, I was like, all people actually want to do is go somewhere where it's cheap entry, no queues, great music all night, and somewhere where if you don't want to dance and have a rest,
yeah.
you can have a little chat. I was like, this is such a simple formula, and yet every pub you go to, you know, we used to go for a drink after work in pubs, didn't we? And then they'd yeah. crank the music up at 6:15, and you're like, everybody in here is in a suit or a coat dress.
What like, is that about?
And it's like, that doesn't make us buy more drinks. That makes us want to fuck off. Like, and I just thought, it's such a weird thing that people don't seem to understand what people want from nights out anymore. And like,
oh my God, you're so right. I'm actually tingling.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's every pub and club and bar and everything seems to have like two hours. It's like you can't have all three. You know that thing where
yeah.
it's like, not every woman can have. Da, da, da. Yeah. It's like, not every venue seems to just have like what I put on for my night. It's like, yeah. it's so easy. It's so simple. Why is the music blaring like it's a club night at 6 p.m?
Yeah. Even though it's like this big open square of a room
yeah.
where people are eating like chicken and having a
yes.
headcat, you
yes.
know?
Yes, 100%. Like... Yeah. Honestly, it does my absolute head in. And it's like, oh, why are you playing music that everybody in here hates? Like,
yeah.
it's just absolute horseshit,
like almost lift music dance. Do you know what I mean? Like such complete
lift music dance.
Do you know what I mean? Like generic dance. Nobody's enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is time for me to step in. And I just want to go out and
be
dance.
The change you wish to see in the world.
Thank you so much. I'm very important.
You are.
But like, I just thought, I just want to dance with my mates to good music.
Yeah.
That is it. And it feels like when you stumble across a place like that, you're like, oh my God.
I would love the Sentimental Garbage listeners to all sort of collaborate on like one of those Google Maps that lots of people can contribute to.
Oh, yes.
And we can all sort of pin our favourite pubs that have dance floors.
Yeah, pubs. I was thinking about Pwad, pubs with a dance floor. I was thinking about this today. I was like, yeah. Post 30, the Pwad list.
The Pwad list. We need the Sentimental Garbage Pwad list.
Do. My boyfriend DJs in places like that. That's the only reason I know these places do still exist, thank God, yeah. Because he DJs in like late night places with like, you know, he plays like Northern Soul, Motown, early 90s dance. Oh, the dream.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, open till 1 or 2 if you want to stay that late. Great. And we need that list. The Sentimental Garbage Party after your live event,
yes, so,
was insane.
It was insane.
But that was just all
that
music
was just
that
the
everyone wanted.
Dance floor, yeah. Us playing like Robbie Williams and
yeah,
it Al.
And the best, and it was, I was honestly buzzing from that for like 3 days.
Yeah, same.
And I was like, this is not a difficult, I mean, I don't mean like,
no,
yours specifically was genuinely, I think, the biggest thing since the moon landing, but like, I've never felt an energy like it. But I mean, that formula isn't hard to do.
No. What? And what do you think has happened? Because you've worked in pubs, you've worked in nightlife. What's the communication breakdown that has happened between owner and the customer?
It's interesting. I feel like people don't want to take the gamble on a music type or a certain thing because then that person might not want to come. So it's almost like they try and keep it as generic as possible to not exclude anyone. But then what happens is everybody has one drink or two drinks and then leaves. And then maybe that's enough to tick it over. But anytime anybody does try and do something different, I feel like it does always take off or find its audience or whatever. So I don't know why there's like a move against it. I guess chains are all about like absolute bare minimum, keep people. Do you know what I mean? But it's so easy to just put on a great DJ that's going to play stuff that people are going to dance to that isn't absolute horseshit. So easy.
It's like we all know what the good songs are.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We genuinely all do. Like, you know it, I know it.
Yeah, and like that Sentimental Garbage Disco we did was one of the best nights of my life.
Yeah. Oh my God, same. Yeah. Honestly. I was in shock after it.
Yeah, so was I. Because it's like, you know, and I hope that we can do maybe 1 or 2 for this.
Yes, we will be.
We will be. Definitely in Brighton, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the only weekend night that we'll definitely be doing.
Yeah. I've already emailed some venues there.
So guys, keep an eye.
Get back to me.
This
venues.
Feels very talk radio. I really enjoy it. Yeah. Guys, keep an eye. Make a map. Go to a pub.
Guys, shout out to Brighton, 7th of June. We're going to see you there from 11 p.m.
I love you, DJ Mark. So we're going to try and do another one. And I also just, I had such an epiphany that night, which is that you know, I've done events before and I'm unbelievably fucking fortunate to be able to do events that people actually want to come to.
Oh,
and
yeah, it's great.
This podcast and everything. And then it gives me an opportunity to sell my books, which is just like, it's hard out there for authors, man. I'm so fortunate.
Yeah, but you've created this community. And honestly, at that, not to like go so far up your hole, but like, but honestly, every single person at that party was just so delighted to be there, having such a great time. There was no aggro.
No.
There were some ladies who lied to me and told me they work for Stylist and don't think that I've forgotten you. But apart
from, I love that. I love people chancing it.
Because me, my
chancers are important.
Yeah, I know. And we let them in because they tried. But yeah, and there was two people that got, there was two girls that had come all the way from Poland to come, and then I got two returns of like people that were ill on the night, and then I messaged them and said, I've got your tickets.
Aww.
And it was just great.
Polish girlies.
Yeah, I felt like God.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It was incredible because like, as I was saying, you know, it's, I'm very, very fortunate, but it's also when you have a podcast and you also have these like book signings that often happen after the live podcast, it means you have to keep people waiting in a line for a long time, and that it immediately sets up this power imbalance that feels very like, now wait your turn and then I'll speak to you when it's your turn to speak. And then But then if you take all, get rid of all that and you just put it in a dance floor, and it's this huge equalizer of being like, we're all just singing Taylor Swift together.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah. And I also think as a DJ.
As a DJ
and comedian, my entire skill set balances on keeping the energy of a place at a certain level, right?
Yeah.
So like sometimes gigs will be fairly low energy or whatever the vibe is and you can't really do anything about it, or it might be kind of an average one, or it might be banging, right? And your live show was like electric, right? Even when I listened to it back, I was like, you can literally sense the energy in the room. And then to be like, if you'd have said, and now we'll cue. Like,
yeah.
As an event organizer and a, you know, a comedian and stuff like that, you are literally like taking the sting out of your night.
Do you know what? That's what it feels like for me as well, because I'm coming off stage and I'm buzzing and people have been laughing and it feels like a real synergy in the room. And like, and now I'll sit at a desk with my Sharpies.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on to your next one on the list, which is very different to what we've talked about so far, which has mostly been about going out and getting smashed. It's Graham Norton.
Oh my God.
Why'd you put Graham Norton in here? I love this.
Okay. I said something to you once and you said that it was the most adorable thing that you'd ever heard. And I always remember that, is that I said that what happens is I get home from my gig or whatever, or if I've been out for a couple of drinks after my gig on a Friday night, and I get in bed and I put Graham Norton on and I always fall asleep within the first 5 minutes. And then on the Saturday morning, I watch it properly.
That I forgot you told me that. That is so cute. I watch it properly.
I listen properly to what Graham has to say. I listen to his, I genuinely, because Graham Norton is an incredibly gifted comedic actor. He is a brilliant stand-up comedian. And we all put up, despite his skills, with that shit joke at the top that's written by someone else that he does about the current affairs or
somebody famous. Yeah.
It's always terrible. And I'm like, why? But we all enjoy it, okay? We all think, look, Graham must want to do that. He knows it's bad. He knows it's bad. But then it's like a comfort blanket to me, the Graham Norton show. And Graham Norton's voice, I like him. I like to listen to him on the radio as well. I haven't actually read his books yet, but my mum has sent me 3 of his novels and says they're very good. Hand on heart, I haven't read them yet. I'm sure they're amazing as well. But I just feel like he keeps me abreast of what to go and see at the cinema, what to go and see at the theatre. He shows me some young musical artist who I will never listen to ever again. But, you know, they do a little performance. Good for them.
And you know what? It's good old-fashioned British telly.
Honestly.
Increasingly, I am less interested in TV and more interested in telly.
Yes.
Graham Norton is telly.
Telly.
The Traitors is telly. Celebrity SAS is telly.
Yeah.
I think
it weirdly, I know it's a chat show, but it is a weird form of escapism. Like, they just talk about their projects, and really, on Graham Norton, they don't even talk massively in depth about it because he is so light with the way that he... And also, I love the fact that you're watching, like, Jodie Foster on a couch with, like, some comedian that's doing, like, a regional tour.
Yeah, it's because the charm of it is actually about the chemistry between. Yeah. Because everyone will have their one or two questions. They'll be like, "Oh, you know, I play Batman or whatever."
Yeah.
But like, actually, it's about the fun of seeing like Miriam Margolyes next to like Brad Pitt, next to like Sarah Silverman, or you know what I mean? Like, it's
genuinely sometimes 5 huge A-listers, and you're like, that is a lot of ego and a lot of you know, people kind of clambering for airtime, I would imagine, and used to being the big name in the room and talking the most and not having anyone interrupt them and stuff. And Graham kind of just like lightly takes the piss out of them, sits there with a glass of wine, and you'd almost think he's like, oh, the sort of naughty little brother, but he's in control of like the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he never lets on that he is, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he is such a powerful figure. And he does wear it so, so lightly.
Yeah, I think that's what I like about him. And I think also, just as on a personal note, Graham Norton comes to the Fringe every single year.
Yeah.
And he just goes and sees like 5 or 6 very small shows. He doesn't ask for comps. He doesn't tell anyone he's coming. And he just goes and watches it. And then he will like tweet about these new artists and their shows and basically fills their shows, you know, because people see Graham Norton tweeting
about
it. Totally.
And do you know what? He gave me a blurb as well.
Did he?
He gave me a blurb for the Rachel incident.
Oh!
I just think he's so cool.
Honestly, like a sort of, I say underrated national treasure. Everyone loves him, but like because he's a chat show host, people kind of forget that
he is such a gem of a person, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of people would be like, oh, he doesn't actually do anything. He kind of hosts the show.
Mm.
Like, he doesn't have... But I just think he's... I just love Graham Norton.
I remember a friend in TV once said to me that they... She had to go to the BAFTAs for work, and she was there with these American TV producers who were over, like, promoting their show. And so she took them to the BAFTAs or whatever, and she was like, oh yeah, these are our Emmys. And they were like, really? They were there. They were at the bar, and they're like, everyone here looks like a friggin' hairdresser. And I'm like, yeah, everyone in British TV looks like and feels like and is a hairdresser.
Yeah.
And like Graham Norton and Alan Carr are like really expensive hairdressers in a provincial town.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you mean the nicest hairdresser in Corby? Do you know what I mean?
It's 100%.
Like, it's like, oh, you go to Graham.
Yeah. Everyone loves him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's holding a...
Sit down there now.
Yeah, are you going to Graham's Cheese and Wine Party?
Yeah.
I feel like he's friends with all these megastars, and like when he has people on, you feel like you didn't know that they were friends, but then they'll say something and he'll be like, you know, like Judi Dench was on and she was like, I've never been to a club. And he was like, yes, you have. You've been with me. And she was like, oh gosh, of course I have. And it turns out he'd taken Judi Dench to GAY, and like I just feel like he's this kind of social glue for a lot of the country. And I get genuinely sad when the Graham Norton show isn't on, because you're like, oh, what good films are coming? Because you can watch something and think, that looks shit, you know? But
Graham
will just make the interview fun anyway, or make them talking fun. It's only when an American comes on and they always want to do a turn and I have to literally put it on mute. You know, when they do something embarrassing, like they say, oh my God, I learned to sing and play the piano for this role. And then they're like, well, we've got a piano here. And,
and
then they do like a full song and the other people are sat so close to them watching them on the couch, and I'm like, yeah, and there's, you know, some fucking cricketer sat on the end that's just like, what the fuck is going on? I'm watching Will Smith sing a ballad or something. Like, so awkward. But I think that's just all part of the charm of it. And also because I grew up with Graham Norton being really like smutty and dirty and like stuff on his late night show, Graham Norton.
That I think about that all the time. I think about like staying up late and watching it with my sister and him like reviewing sex toys.
Yeah.
And, like, it was also a very dawn of the internet type of show where it would be like him finding like a random website of like anniesfannies.com and like let's call Annie's Fannies.
And, like, and they would call up and
And or like, and then like Joan Rivers would be on, or RuPaul, or like quite like.
Yeah. It was extremely cool, like kind of edge of like fringe culture cult show, really. But it was on like every single night at 11:05 on Channel 4.
Yeah.
Every single night.
But then it's so strange because like 11:05 on Channel 4 back then would have constituted for like genuine counterculture, because they like people...
That's the word I was looking for.
People weren't like watching TV at that time, whereas now people like... They wake up in the morning, they absorb content, and then they keep on absorbing content until 1 a.m.
Until they die.
But like, yeah, that would have been like the student's hour and like the edgy and people are smoking weed in their student flats kind of thing.
Exactly that. And I think that's why the Graham Norton show still feels cool now, because you've grown up with Graham, the kind of like... You know, the mistress, the imp.
Yeah.
Like your sort of naughty cousin that comes around and he's a bit older and he's cool and he's like telling you about stuff. And, you know, and it's just, and he always, always did it without making anybody feel creeped out or like smutty in a bad way.
Yeah.
Or like, it was always silly and fun. The joke was always on the right person. Like, he was always great. And so now that he's got this chat show and he's kind of mainstream, but you kind of feel like you're still watching that naughty guy have a chat show.
Yeah.
You know? So I just think he should be protected at all costs.
Have you ever seen that video of him aged like 17 on The Late Late Show?
No.
I've shared it a couple of times on my Instagram. I am obsessed with it. It's like early 80s, I'm going to say. And there's like, The Late Late Show in Ireland is like Ireland's longest running TV show. And it's just like, you know, a celebrity comes on, but also there's like a moment where we all talk about the issues, you know?
Right, yeah.
There's like issues. The issues are like, oh, should underage teenagers be going to dances? And should the parish be sponsoring? Should the parish be allowing these dances?
Oh, I have seen this. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And there's like these like, the microphone is on these, like, you know, 16-year-old like uber Christians, but like, but not even just that Christian, just more like just following the fucking status quo, just dorks following status quo, being like, I think there's a lot of pressure on young people to be going to dances and things be getting sexual, and I think it's a bit young, whatever. And then suddenly the mic goes to Graham Norton, and he's got this sort of long sort of dandy hair, and
yeah,
he looks kind of like a 70s pop star, even though he's in the mid 80s, but that's Ireland for you.
Yeah.
And he was like, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with having an old dance?
Come on.
And he's just like, it's so weird to watch somebody that young and just who's like being pulled in as part of like a busload of students going to the Late Late Show or whatever, to be like radiating star power,
yeah,
at like such an insanely young age.
I have seen that clip, and I do remember thinking that. And I think that's what I like about him as well. He's just like down to earth, always talking sense, always, yeah, wants people to have a good time. There's never been anything, oh, why has he said that? Why has he done that? Or like that he's never tried to be kind of, he's never tried to be sort of holier than thou, and but at the same time, his heart's in the right, yeah, place, and is, do you know what I mean? Like, he kind of stood up for trans people. That's why he came off Twitter in the end.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, because he was essentially sort of, I mean, I think he was kind of weighing in on J.K. Rowling and saying, yeah, you know, you've got a huge...
That woman's a fucking Satanist.
Yeah, like, you've got a huge platform here. Kind of, why are you using it for this?
Yeah.
I think was...
I mean, Jesus, I could talk for so long about why on earth is that woman using her platform.
So odd.
It's so crazy.
It's mind-blowing. I feel like when Graham Norton dies, all these stories will come out, like, oh, he funded,
yeah, like George Michael's stories.
Yeah, like George Michael's, yeah, stories, yeah.
Benevolent gay man hit stories.
Oh.
We love them.
Benevolent gay benefactor. dies in stylish home.
Oh, no, I don't like the idea of Graham hearing this.
No, Graham, you'll never die.
Graham, you'll never die.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Let's go to next on the list. Weirdly, you've provided me with two Irish gay men on this list. The other one is Andrew Scott.
Oh, God, Andrew Scott. I'm
worried for him.
Why?
The work-life balance is all off, I think.
I know, but he's peaking. He'll have a bit of time off. You know, maybe he'll say before his next film, look, lads, I need a 2-month sabbatical.
Yeah, because he's gone right in from All of Us Strangers into The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
So, and like, obviously those projects were filmed probably a long time apart. But I'm telling you, I'm sorry, I'm sure you have much more to say, but like the way that actors are... like milked for content these days, I find incredibly worrying. Like every time I open, because I don't have any social media on my phone anymore, the only thing I have is YouTube, and so that'll be my like my little waiting for the kettle to boil time wasting activity.
Yeah.
And so every time you open it up, it's like, how many lines does Kirsten Dunst remember from her classic movies, and like what's Anne Hathaway think of this lip balm, and like,
right,
Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal read each other thirst tweets, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
like,
let them have a rest.
Let them have a rest.
Yeah.
And it also means that, like, I feel like there used to be this whole thing, even when we were, like, working in the media, where it was, like, Taffy Bredesner Akner would, like, have these huge profiles that would come out, and you'd have these, like, meaty, like, 4,000-word long things to, like, really get the psychology of somebody.
Yeah, of course.
And what's interesting about, like, learning about actors and who they really are is that, like, it's kind of, it shouldn't be necessary, but it sort of is, because it's, like, it's this weird thing that we do, I think, with our celebrities, where we're like, in order for us to believe that they're doing a huge feat in their film,
yeah,
we have to know that it's a jump for them. We're like, yeah, oh, it's interesting he's playing somebody from the 1940s because he was born in 1981.
Yeah.
And I know that. On some level, we're doing that.
We're literally like, no, hear me out. In Fleabag, he was straight. I know. But in real life, he's gay.
Yeah, basically, I just want I want everyone to leave Andrew Scott alone for 6 months.
Yeah, no, I think if you know, we should start the campaign now for Andrew Scott. Have a break.
Have a break, Andrew. Looking a bit gaunt, Andrew.
Have a day off, love.
Yeah,
yeah.
Although not because I'm sick of you, but because I'm worried for you.
No, because you've produced some absolutely incredible work.
Yeah. In quite a short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I know he was in Sherlock, but I didn't really watch that, and so I think there was a lot of people's first kind of mainstream
exposure.
That
was the first time I saw him as well. And I would say, because I didn't watch Fleabag, the most dominant way in which I know him. And now everybody, everybody's switching the podcast off. They're being like, how can we trust her? She's not watched Fleabag.
Well, I saw him in Fleabag. I mean, I recognised him. So I must have seen him in like bits and bobs over the years. But then I watched All of Us Strangers as well. And I just thought, God, this man is just... there's something about him that I think draws you to him. I don't, that's why he's a good actor, right? But like, I think he is... yeah, everyone wants a piece of him, and we shouldn't. We need to leave him be. And he is also...
Same with Paul. Leave him be as well.
Just leave Paul be. But I think I think neither of them have social media as well. And I think that's almost what makes people a bit more obsessed with them, especially in the modern age. Because people like that, of course, they have obsessive fans. Of course, they have huge fan bases. But I almost think in this age of, like you say, seeing somebody promote their film over 800 platforms and doing these stupid games and like talking about the film, but then doing something silly and then talking about an old project and, oh, we brought in Phoebe Waller-Bridge to say hello to Andrew Scott. Remember when they were both in Fleet? Like, with stuff, like, I think the people that don't have social media that kind of take a step back, they're almost creating a new level with a little bit more like respect for them. Is that a kind of weird thing to say? But like, you know, they are creating that little bit of barrier. They're creating essentially that gap that we all need.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, he's playing this.
Because someone steps back to make a gap, then everyone else steps forward to try and fill it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah. You always put things better than me. And that's that's exactly what I mean. There's a certain mystery to him, as well as being when you do see him interviewed, like I did on the Graham Norton show, actually. He seems just so down to earth and normal and not up himself. And yeah, he's doing these performances. Oh my God, in All of Us Strangers, I was like, the woman in the cinema offered me a tissue because she was like, are you okay? I was like, oh no, okay. It's just these incredible performances across, you know, really, I just think he's great. I just think he's very cool.
It's also just cool to see somebody like a character actor, someone who up until now would have been like considered like a character actor, or on some level, a that guy, you know, people being like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Watching them become like a megastar, because like, you know, again, you know that they know their friends and they know their body and they know all the pubs, the good dance floors.
Do you know what I think it is as well? Yeah, it's exactly that. I think he's achieved success. I think he might be like slightly older than us, maybe like late 30s or something.
He's definitely older than us.
Yeah. But what I mean is like, he's kind of achieved mainstream success when he already knows who he is. And that's what makes him quite attractive. You know, he's not like, I mean, Paul Mescal, God love him. He's doing very well, actually, because he's not, I don't think he's got social media and stuff. And he seems quite level-headed. But you're like, the man is barely born. You know, like, give him, just stop following him everywhere. Do you know what I mean?
Can I tell you an incredible story I heard?
Oh, my God, go on.
It's literally nothing about him at all, except that a pal of mine, she was at a house party in Sydney. And he was over there doing some work. She's from Sydney. He was over there doing some work. He was friends with a mutual friend. Ipso facto, he was at a gaff party. Like, not a red velvet rope members only party. He was at a capital G gaff party.
This is what I think he is.
Like, tinnies, like people smoking on the balcony.
Nice.
Like, you get the picture. And the way my friend told the story was so funny. She was just like, he got there and everyone just subtly lost their minds. And like, all the women were just like doing mental things, and also like observing each other do mental things and then trying to overcorrect. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, there was one girl who was like a massive fan and like had completely like creamed her jeans about normal people or whatever. And she was in the kitchen. And she was like, or she was leaning against like the cutlery drawer or whatever. And he came in and he was like, oh, can you pass me a bottle opener there? And she said, oh, because we're all here to serve Paul. And then like,
oh, bless him. He must have been like, and my friend can everyone just calm down?
Yeah. And then he was like, thanks. And just like left the room or whatever. And then my friend went to her friend. She was like, "What the fuck was that?" And she was like, "I don't know. I freaked out." And then my friend was like, she was like, "Okay, when I get my chance to talk to Paul, I'm going to be super normal. I'm not going to pretend like I don't know who he is. I'm just going to be a normal person with famous film star Paul Mescal.
I'm going to be normal people.
I'm going to be a normal people with normal person Paul Mescal." And then, so she, so that, like, he was like, apparently at this point, all the women were being so fucking mental. He was only talking to the men about football and, like, stuff. And,
yeah.
She saddled up to whatever conversation he was having with whatever guy, and they were talking about, like, muggings and whatever. And they were like, and Paul said something to the effect of, like, "Oh, yeah, you know, my house got broken into once, and it was actually, like, really traumatizing. I'm surprised by how much it affected me."
Oh, no.
And then she said, like, "Oh, was that before or after you became incredibly famous?" And then he just blinked at her and was like, "I was 14, so I would say before," and then just, like, turned away. Just like,
oh God, the lad just wants to go to a fucking gaff party and have a nice time,
have a beer, and talk about his house breaking. And even, like, the fact of me even repeating the story on a podcast is yet another thing of, like, people being fucking wacky about it.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, I don't know if this is a thing in Ireland, but I feel like everybody in the UK, there was, like, a rumour that there was always a rumour that there was, like, a large cat that had escaped from, like, a zoo or something, like a panther or you know, something like, there was always, like, the panther of Corby, right, where I'm from.
The panther of Corby.
And it was just like, oh, somebody saw the panther. There was always, like, a large black cat that was, like, roaming around. Do you know what I mean? Like, count on that, and someone would be like, "Oh my God, I think I nearly hit the panther tonight." And it was always,
that's
a weird.
Nuts. That is definitely Corby specific.
Okay, it must be Corby specific, right? But there was always the rumor that there was a panther that had escaped,
yeah,
from somewhere, and it was, like, roaming around the kind of industrial estates of Corby, and that. But you had to drive through that from, like, one part of town to the other. I feel like that is Paul Mescal in East London, where I live now. Like, everybody always has a story about, like, somebody knew somebody who saw him doing karaoke in the pub on Friday. Someone saw him in the co-op on Tuesday. But then, like, there's always, like, the rumour of him around, just, like, all the time.
Yeah, I think it's because he's, like, maybe it's particularly strong in our demographic because, like, he's our age.
Yeah, well,
he looks very normal, you know? And that's why people find him attractive, is because he looks normal.
Yeah, and he lived very close to me in lockdown as Normal People was released, and we were all horned up to fuck, okay? And locked in our houses watching Paul Mescal be a very sensitive boy in Normal People. And so everyone was kind of obsessed with, like, he was always in the co-op near my pal's house, and she saw him a few times. I think I saw him once, obviously didn't do anything. And then
obviously that was something weird.
Sorry, yeah. And then he started dating Phoebe Bridgers, and then she was always around.
Yeah.
And it was quite a weird time, and it was in lockdown and stuff. And then I remember, like, when I was watching Normal People, at that point he was on Instagram, but he'd only, you know, anyway, everyone had just started following him. And I remember thinking, I'm going to DM him about it, which I've never done with a celebrity in my life.
Oh my God.
And I was, but at that point, we didn't know he was going to be Paul Mescal.
Right.
And so I DM'd him saying, "Hey, I just wanted to say I thought your acting performance was great in Normal People," because I thought this will differentiate
I'll
me
talk
from
to him
all
about
the,
his performance.
All the other thirsty slags.
That's so funny.
It's my only ever, like, celebrity DM.
Just wanted
DM.
To say I thought your performance was amazing in Normal People.
Just want to say.
But he's never heard that.
Artistically, I just thought you were incredible.
One artiste to another.
Yeah. I just want to say I would not have sex with you.
But I would talk to you about your craft.
About your stuff. Anyway, he never even read it, and then he deleted Instagram shortly after. So we never got to be.
The final one on your list today is reviews.
Oh, okay.
And you were quick to clarify that when you say reviews, you don't mean, like, any review about yourself.
No,
or
no.
Your own work.
No, I actually really, this is going to sound like I'm really arrogant. I did my first full Fringe last year in Edinburgh, and I didn't read any reviews until the end. So I didn't read any
That's
reviews
cool.
until I was on my way to your wedding, in fact. I read them at the airport. And I really thought that I was going to be kind of like, here we go. This is going to be a real kind of roller coaster of emotion and stuff. And I read them all and I was like, yeah, I'm all right. Like, I really, I don't know, they didn't bother me.
They didn't send you one way or the other.
No, because I guess because maybe I had one, like, audience review that was so weird, and I think she maybe thought I was somebody else because she called me a posh nepo baby, which is really weird. I was like, okay, Jeff, Jeff, who worked in British Steel for 4 years in the accounts department, then. Yep, that's where I got my name.
I got my name.
Yeah. Weird. Anyway,
I wonder who she thought you were.
I really don't know. But, you know, most of the reviews were like, I liked this, and I didn't really like this. And I was kind of like, fine. Yeah, I don't really mind reviews at all. But what I'm talking about in the context of this, right, is I just wish that not everything asked for a review all of the time. Mm-hmm. I wish, this is my positive spin on it, because it's sentimental garbage. I wish to now live my life review-free. I wish to say, that restaurant looks good. We will go in.
Let's pop in.
Let's see if we like it. Instead of when people go on and they like check 10 reviews on like TripAdvisor or whatever site it is, or, you know, The Guardian's reviewed it for this or that. I think we should go into life a bit pre-internet with when it comes to like reviews of eating and drinking, especially, but stuff like that.
Yeah, I think we are putting too much pressure on the experience of the food being amazing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and we also have to remind ourselves why we're going to the restaurant, because 9 times out of 10, if you're a normal person, you are going to a restaurant to see your friend and have a chat.
Oh, yeah.
And all you actually want from that experience is like a bit of a bottle of wine, starter, a main, maybe a pud.
Yeah.
And like and a kind of a nice environment for you to chat to your friend where people don't explain things to you and they don't ask you about things. There's nothing like, I'm sorry, this is like the most like 90s comedian take ever, but like, I was out the other night with somebody and just like, I felt like I was on a date with the waiter as well. Do you know what I mean? Like,
this. Yes. This is the culture that I just hate. Do you know how it works here?
Yeah. I've been
to a restaurant before.
Can you read?
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I just think we all need to lower our expectations. Because actually, do you know what? This is a perfect example, because this person I was out dinner with the other night, she's a fairly new friend. And like, I actually read some like press reviews, as in like literally in The Guardian, of like, oh, where's Jay Rayner been lately? That's like kind of reasonably priced and in central London. And I found this restaurant and he was like fucking blowing his load over it or whatever, completely going mad. Made a reservation, fairly new friend. So I'm like, oh, she'll know that I'm a tastemaker, because like I'm following the most famous food critic in the country to see what he thinks whatever. Yeah. And then we went and it was like, completely bang average food with somewhat overbearing wait staff.
Yeah.
And everything was just a bit too fucking salty. Cocktails didn't have any booze in them, really. And we had a great time because she's lovely. But like, I could tell, you know, maybe this is just me being a slightly socially anxious person sometimes, where it's like, I could feel the weight of my bad choice hanging over us as we left. And I was like, I'm sorry, that wasn't very good. And she was like, no. And I was like, let's just talk about it not being good. And she was like, okay.
Oh, that's, yeah, relieving.
Yeah, you need to like puncture the atmosphere or something.
Yeah, I think we all need to revert to going to restaurants with like gemstones on the walls and weird sculptures. You know, they're always
gemstones?
The best.
Gemstones?
Do you know, like a weird decor.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of like there's a family vibe going on. The waiters are like, they're a bit inattentive.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going on.
Yeah, they kind of forget you're there for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the food's always banging.
Yeah.
And then it's 12 quid for everything.
And then all those places, they just went after COVID, man.
Yeah.
But everywhere that I ate with you between 2015 and 2019 is dead.
Yeah. Sad. I know. It's so sad. Yeah. I think we should bring back the kind of gaudy restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gaudy restaurant according to one man's twisted view of what eating should be, you know?
Yeah,
and like they're always the ones where like you get a really the waiter has paid zero fucking attention to you all the meal, but then he's suddenly very eager about the limoncello.
Oh yeah, free shots.
Free
shots at the end. We went to an amazing Turkish for the weekend.
We did.
Oh, laminated menus, you know, the whole shebang. Absolutely incredible. Like, yeah.
200 things on the menu.
200 things on the menu. Just, I think, maybe it's just that we need to go back in time to old restaurants. I think that is what I'm actually trying to say.
I think,
is it good? Nobody knows.
In the summary of this podcast today is very much like, let's have things how they were. Pop with the dance floor and a laminated menu.
Yeah, I didn't mean to sound like that. Andrew Scott, he's current. We love him.
Love him. Carry on, sir, but in moderation.
Yeah. Paul Mescal is the future. Graham Norton is all three, the past, present, and future.
Wow. The past, present, and future of Irish masculinity.
Yes.
I love it.
Oh my God, it actually is. The Holy Trinity. God.
Yeah.
What an absolute night that would
Father,
be with those
Son,
three.
The Holy Spirit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
That'd be great.
Three of them.
Three of them in a pub with a dance floor, half a weed gummy, after a mixed grill.
That would be some laugh, to be fair.
That's what we want.
And if any of you would like to come on a mixed grill with us, and by mixed grill, I mean big chat.
Yes.
In a nice auditorium with some lovely girls and then a pub with a dance floor afterwards.
Because
even if we don't find a bloody... even if we don't have a official Sentimental Garbage Disco, we will be looking for the pub with the dance floor in your local area.
Yeah.
So if you can bring us there,
yeah.
We will follow.
Don't worry, we'll have a big one in Brighton, but the other ones will go on the hoof.
I'm going to read out everywhere we're going, and you're going to tell me whether you had a gig there and what happened.
Okay.
So obviously, London, the Hackney Empire, that's on the 2nd of June.
I wish I'd gigged at Hackney Empire.
I'm so intimidated by that.
I've been to Hackney Empire, but I've never gigged.
We have sold so many tickets to the Hackney Empire, and yet there remain tickets left because it's so big.
Oh, God.
So please come.
Help.
Help! The Brighton Dome on 7th of June. Have you been there?
I gigged there 3 weeks ago.
How was it?
For the first ever time. It was incredible. And there are so many pwads in Dan.
What? There are so many pwads.
So many pwads. But I'm looking for the big pwad. For all of us to have an official after party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Because they're all very small, so we need to have one big one.
We need a biggie.
Yeah.
A big guy. Oh, and just for clarity's sake, obviously all the ticket sales go through fane.co.uk for the events, but the disco we're just putting on ourselves. I mean, not even we. I mean, you and your partner Joey, both of you are DJs.
But...
So it's like it's going through them. So I just want everyone to know that like, we are putting on these discos in the spirit of like fun and crack only.
Yeah.
These are not like, this is not Big Caroline you're buying into. Because I don't like the idea of people are like, well, I've just paid 35 quid for a ticket.
Oh, no. Well, ours are cheap tickets as well. And we basically just did cheap tickets to cover our cost and then also ticket it so that, I mean, if we hadn't have ticketed the last one, I think there would have been a security issue.
The 15th of June, the Lowry in Salford Quays, which I've been told that's Manchester.
Yes, it is Manchester. I did do a gig there. I supported a wonderful comedian called Steve Bugea, in his show. So I did my opening 20. Then he went on, and within the hour of his show, the couple in front of us who were blind drunk on a Sunday at 7 p.m. Had a full-on argument. She dropped her phone down the side of the seats. He left, dumped her, and then she had a panic attack and we had to put the house lights up in Steve's closing speech. Like his
what?
His kind of poignant but funny kind of closing bit.
Right.
She started being like and my friend Nat, who was a psychologist, was there and she was like talking her through it. It was a wild time. Lovely venue though.
Please no one bring that energy to the Lowry and Salford Quays on the 15th of June.
I genuinely think they had like booked whatever was on. Like they were not there for Steve's show. So don't worry.
Wow.
It was a very odd day for everyone.
What an unsettling image. 16th of June, the Old Fruit Market in Glasgow.
Gigged in Glasgow. Never gigged at the Old Fruit Market. Very intrigued.
Remember when you and I gigged in Glasgow?
Yes, it was amazing.
So something I haven't mentioned in the podcast yet, which is... that before I had Sentimental Garbage, you and I and Hannah Varrell, who's actually the producer slash mixer of Sentimental Garbage, we had a chat show that's called The School for Dumb Women.
Yes.
Which has a lot of the same DNA as Sentimental Garbage in that it was kind of, it came out of the idea of like, we were in this media moment where everything was about like, What do smart women want to read?
Oh,
what do smart women want to do? And like, it was that moment where every woman was being encouraged to learn how to code for reasons that were completely unclear. And we decided that we were like, yeah, but like, what about the dumb women? And like, we should be sort of reveling in like just being a bit thick as well.
Yeah.
And just sort of like feeling like we can own up to not knowing things.
Yeah.
Which I feel like has a lot in common with sort of like the female silliness of Sentimental Garbage as
Definitely.
Well. But we were like our only ever like, gig, I suppose, as School for Dumb Women, was that we were asked to go to a creative writing master's in the University of Glasgow, where Andrew Meehan, a very lovely author and professor of literature, asked us, because he was a fan of the podcast, asked us to give like a seminar to his class.
It was so much fun.
I know, it was so It was such a strange couple of days, wasn't it?
I was actually like, this is my new life now. I'm an academic
and I live in... I remember thinking, like, I'm going to move to Glasgow.
Yeah, I know. We went to Garibaldi's restaurant. It was great. yeah. I might even do like a little work in progress show like in the afternoon in Glasgow if we get there early. Try some jokes.
Oh, fun.
Why not?
I definitely don't... do that. Because I'll have to be going around signing books in bookshops.
Oh,
so
I can be like your minion and then nip out for an hour and do some jokes.
God, we're gonna have some crack.
I know, I can't wait.
It's gonna be so good. And then the final show is on the 20th of June at St. George's in Bristol.
Bristol is a great city. It is so much fun. It's at the forefront of the revolution. They're boycotting all the bad guys. It's so good. Honestly,
I've never been to Bristol.
You feel properly like you are, A, in an episode of Skins, which I don't know if you've covered on Sentimental Garbage. I feel like you must have done. Skins was a huge part of everybody's life, I feel, around our age.
It was the euphoria of its day.
Yes, it was, so you feel not only like you're in Skins, you feel like you're among the good guys, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very, very cool city. And it sold the biggest venue for my tour. It was great.
So here's the thing about Bristol I'm having beef with right now. Because I feel like Bristol is so cool and lots of bands go and stop there or whatever. They, out of all of these venues, they are being a little bit slow on the uptake, ticket-wise. I feel like because they're keeping their options open.
Bristol, we know where you are.
Bristol, close your options.
Bristol, this is the best option for you. So do it. Nobody else is in town that night. I've checked. Eric Cantona is singing his songs. You don't want that.
What?
No, he's not.
I mean, up against Cantona?
No, but he is doing a tour at the moment of his songs, and apparently it's worse than bad.
I want to go.
So I was trying to think about who I could swing at that would not care, but who is bad. And it's Eric Cantona. He's in that Venn diagram.
Wow.
But he is doing London Shepherd's Bush Empire, apparently.
Well, that's bonkers.
Hot bonkers.
Hot bonkers. Everyone, we hope to see you there. It's going to be probably the best summer of my life, I think.
Oh, God, I'm so excited.
I'm just having so much crack at the moment, and I just really hope that the energy keeps spinning on.
Yeah. You know? It will. You're nice.
What about your stuff separate to me?
I don't have any. You are me. You are
Step
me now.
Step out of my shadow and shine.
I am. Oh, do you know what? I'm actually doing my only London performance of my show. Not My Finest Hour, it's called. And I'm doing it on the 29th of May at Moth Club. And it's being filmed.
Oh my God.
Yes. And I would love people to come because they're being a bit Bristol about it at the moment.
Guys.
Stop being cool. It's a Wednesday. There's literally nothing else on in the capital city. And I'm doing it with my friend Adam Flood as well, who's an amazing comedian. So you actually get two shows for £20.
And you might be on video.
Yeah, and you might be on video, yeah. And it's in Moth Club. It's very cool.
That's very cool.
My boyfriend's going to spin some tunes after. We'll have a little mini afters.
Oh,
it's going to be great.
And your boyfriend is the best DJ in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it will be at a level where you can hear yourself think.
For the love of God.
Because the part of knowing how to throw a good party is knowing when not to throw a mad party. When throwing a Wednesday after a gig.
It's called a mature sesh. Some tunes,
the mature sesh will be in full flow.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.